It's the True Faith podcast here. Myself, Alex Hurst, and Norman Riley fight today to talk about Manchester City 2, Newcastle United 1, and the fact it wasn't quite as bad as we thought. Not only are we going to talk about the match, we're going to talk about the season so far, how we're placed this, where we think the lads are with Rafa, and maybe some stuff on Rio Ferdinand and Keith Bishop as well, which is never ending. But first of all, just want to say thank you to our fantastic patrons who pay £5 a month to keep this podcast that you're listening to free of charge for everybody, and also pay for 6 to 7 extra podcasts a week for the very small cost of £1.25. Thanks to you, lads and lasses, and I'll try not to mention it too many times during the show, because I'm sure you hate to listen to me and Norm talk about football. So Norman, yesterday it wasn't as bad as everyone thought. Pep Guardiola and some Man City fans seem to have been quite complimentary to the likes of Newcastle for the way that we managed to set up and stifle them compared to, the, say, Huddersfield, who had as little possession and were as defensive but conceded 6 goals. Why do you think it wasn't as bad as everyone feared? Was it us being good at what we were trying to do, or was it Man City having a bit of an off day?
A bit of both, I think. I genuinely expected us to get battered, and which is ridiculous, really, because, you know, Rafa teams don't really get battered. You take out the Man U and Watford games last season. Watford, the whole match, we were terrible. Still created chances, but were genuinely terrible. Man U actually taking the lead and not really deserving to lose 4-1 in that game. So, you know, it's more of an anomaly, us getting slaughtered. So really, I probably shouldn't have been as paranoid as I was about getting a Hougan before the match. And that's, you know, and what we did was we just gave a very Rafa Benitez performance against the top 6 side. Incredibly well organised. He set up a different formation, managed to stifle them, and managed to almost successfully. It was only an absolutely outrageous strike from Kyle Walker, the kind of strike that he hits it another 99 times and it goes wide or goes over the bar, guns out for a throw-in. Nothing you can really do about that. And also the first goal was, you know, you could point the finger of blame at Lascelles for that particular incident. Let's not let that take away from his performance for the entire match. He was excellent. But that was just an excellent, excellent Rafa Benitez Newcastle United performance. And also, I do think City, you know, there is an argument that they're slightly complacent. They're probably just expected, and I'm not saying that they consciously expected this, because they're a very professional side full of hard working players, and I don't think they take anything for granted, but I think on a subconscious level, you know, they probably thought on a subconscious level that they would just win this game without really having to put much in. Obviously they did win, but I think they were given a bit of a surprise and a bit of a shock by how well Newcastle played.
Yeah, I totally agree with all of that. I think the fact that Dubravka's played really well, we shouldn't forget, you know, without him or an inferior keeper, and particularly without him being as willing to come from his line and cut out balls that were you know, good passes to Man City attackers. So there is that to consider as well in terms of the narrowness of the defeat. But, you know, at the end of it, 2 really, really good goals. Kyle Walker shot, it's not even gone in the corner. It's gone, like, in between the post and the corner, which is, you know, probably the one part of the goal that had to go in. Sometimes you've just got to say, like, fair play, that is a brilliant, brilliant goal. I think Rafa said afterwards it was a brilliant goal. Not loads you can do about it. I've heard a couple of comments about people saying people get in the way, or should they turn their back, or that's a brilliant goal. Sterling's finish is a brilliant finish. Like, it's that. This is what happens when you play sides of this quality, and I'm sure we'll get onto that later. But very proud of the effort the lads put in. I think Rafa Benitez was spot on in his post-match comments. You can see that these lads are playing for one another and giving everything for the shirt. And that was what saw us okay last season. And I think that's what's going to see us be okay again this season. Do you feel, was the setup exactly what you expected? Do you think that it was the purely kind of Chelsea-esque performance that you saw, or were there any differences? Because I saw a couple of differences, Norman. I thought we pressed the ball a lot better when the ball was in our half, and I thought we tried to push the fullbacks a little bit higher on the rare occasions we're in possession compared to the Man City game. Now, it's interesting that both goals against Man City, against Chelsea, have come from DeAndre Yedlin getting forwards, particularly playing wing-back. I'd like to see that happen even more. So, you know, Arsenal at home, or, you know, Man City at home down the line to come, if we're going to set up with that 5 at the back again, I would love to see the fullbacks push on a lot more. And we didn't get much joy down the left yesterday in terms of Dummett and Perez, which, you know, more Perez later. But I felt that Dunnett was getting forward a lot more compared to what he was against Chelsea. Do you think that was a reaction to some of the negativity again from fans and media against Chelsea, or do you think that's because Man City have two ultra-attacking fullbacks compared to Chelsea?
I don't think any decision that Rafa takes tactically is influenced at all by the reaction you might get in the media or from fans on social media about how negatively he's setting up. I just think that some games you play better than others, and yesterday we performed way better than we did against Chelsea, and I don't think it's necessarily down to any kind of major tactical differences in those two games. I just think, like you say, Man City style of football allowed Yedlin and Dummett to push on because their fullbacks are so high up the pitch. I think it's a system that we could get a lot of success from against better sides. The only reason that it isn't going to be as successful as what it could be is because basically Dummett is a left back or centre half. He's not as Yedlin is, and Yedlin is a wing back, isn't he? Let's be honest. He's more a wing back than he is a full back, and he's more wing back than he is a right midfielder. And Perez just kind of play on the left at all. He's played out there and he puts the work in, but that is just so far from being his natural position. I think Perez is, he would be equally as kind of comfortable, i.e. uncomfortable, at left back as he is on the left hand side of midfield. I just don't think he's cut out for that position at all, regardless of the fact that he puts a work in, as I say. I just think that City system the lads found it, and I'm using inverted commas here, easier to play against than they did against Chelsea. So I don't think there was any tactical changes based on the kind of, you know, the coverage that the supposed negative tactics against Chelsea got.
Why do you think he played Perez then? Well, I totally agree with everything you say. I mean, I don't mind the fact that Jose Perez is a number 10 and an attacking player. I'm not going to use the word wasteful in possession, but, you know, sometimes he loses the ball because at the end of the day, he's trying to take players on. He's trying to do things in very difficult confined spaces against often two defenders or two midfielders, and that's part of his game. And Si made an excellent point last night when we were watching the match, me and Si together, that I think he didn't score his first goal last season until November, and he got the majority of his goals post-Christmas. But even for me now, if you look at the one thing I probably disagree with in terms of the selection, I just don't get Perez left midfield. He's too wasteful in possession. When he's picking the ball up in his own half, he's not the man for that. Why do you think he got the nod over Murphy? And that's Murphy again, who last season had so much success against City with that great goal. Like, what was the thinking, do you think, from Rafa's point of view?
The only reason I can see it possibly happening is the trust levels in terms of the graft that's going to get put in. So I think Rafa, this isn't me saying that Murphy doesn't graft, but I think his trust for Perez is so absolute that he'd rather he could get him in the side somehow. And he didn't want to play him in his usual role yesterday because he wanted to change the system. So he put him in a position that he's played in before, and that, you know, ultimately he doesn't really do much of a job there, but he can still affect the game in the sense that you've got Walker as a very attacking, powerful fullback, a very powerful player. And I think Perez has got possibly more physicality than Murphy. And I'm not saying that Perez is a hard tackler, but he doesn't shirk. He doesn't shirk challenges, and he's got a lot of lower body strength. And I think coming up against Walker sprinting forward, Perez, he maybe thought was a better option at breaking that move down through strength. Whereas Murphy's still a little bit lightweight, and you put Murphy up against Walker, whilst he could maybe do damage going forward.
Fair enough. It was a strange one with Murphy not playing against Forest in the week to play neither game. So I wonder if there was a fitness issue there. But I think, yeah, everything you say there is correct. He didn't have a terrible game, Perez, by any means. It was just a strange one, considering I think the last time we saw him play left wing was possibly that Liverpool game in 2016, we drew 2-2 each, and Rafa took him off at half time. And I put that on Twitter, and someone else pointed out the only other players he's ever kind of hooked at half time were Mitrovic against Wolves when he was, you know, jumping into the keeper with a yellow card, and Stephen Taylor against Southampton for being Stephen Taylor. So yeah, anyway, that was Perez on the left wing. Norman, we'll put a few questions to listeners at TF Weekly Pod. We are on Twitter. Would love to have your follow. Asking a few questions to get where they are with this. There were loads of comments yesterday before the game, which I find a little bit bizarre, about, you know, players who don't play for us anymore in terms of Mitrovic and Gale, but Gale's on loan. and how we miss them and how we shouldn't let them go and all this kind of stuff. You know, there is the argument that considering we're replaced, neither when you think about it, that we shouldn't have let them go. But you know, here's a poll that we put to the listeners: is Salomon Rondon an improvement on Dwight Gayle at centre forward for United? And the answer was emphatic: 82% yes, 6% no, and 12% don't know. So it's fair to say Salomon Rondon has impressed the True Faith listeners. Your own takes on his performances so far?
I think Rondon's an upgrade on both Gayle and Mirotić. I think, you know, we can look at Mirotić's start of the season in the Premier League, and we can look at Mirotić since Christmas at Fulham. You know, in the Championship, his goal scoring record per game is excellent. There's no denying that. However, it's about systems, and he was never going to fit in the Newcastle system under Rafa, whereas Rondon does. It's quite clear. Every game that the games that he come on as a sub, i.e. the Spurs game, I thought he impressed. The game against Cardiff, I think he would have made a difference if he'd had time on the pitch. He was, I thought, excellent against Chelsea for the time he was on the pitch again, and he scored a great goal against Forest, and he was excellent yesterday. Winning headers, intelligence, running the line, creating space. He's clearly a very, very good player. I can't see why we would rather have Gayle or Mirotić in the lineup than him. Gayle, don't get me wrong, I mean, I saw Gayle's goals yesterday. The first one in particular was absolutely brilliant. But it's in the Championship and it's in a different style of play. Gayle doesn't offer the physicality that Rondon offers. I don't think he offers the strength in the air, obviously. Intelligence, now, I think Gayle's a highly intelligent footballer, so I don't think there's a major disparity there. But I just think that, you know, the ease that Gayle's kind of already, switched into in the Championship, it just kind of goes to show that I think he's that level for him is he's just brilliant at it. In the step up to the Premier League, I don't think what he has as a player is quite what we need in the Premier League with the squad that you've got. And I think Rondon does, and I think he's a better player. And I think he offers more.
And Rondon's performance yesterday for you?
Oh, it was excellent. I mean, it was absolutely brilliant. There's been nothing but praise from Newcastle fans that I've seen, and also from, you know, media outlets. He's he went up against, you know, some of the most expensive defenders in the world, and he absolutely gave them one hell of a game. And I think the goal, I mean, he's part of the goal. The ball that he put across was absolutely superb, wasn't it?
Not just the ball, but that little delay to get his, you know, maybe to compare him to other strikers we've had in the past, or to get his head up and realise what's going on and not panic and wait for Yedlin. I mean, Yedlin makes up like superhuman levels of ground. If you look at where the ball is when Kennedy brings it down, which is a great touch, we're going to talk about Kenny later. It's a fantastic goal. It was a great finish, but like you say, what a performance by Rondon.
The amount of headers he won. I've got a tweet here from a Venezuelan journalist. I saw this yesterday. Great game from Salomon Rondon despite Newcastle's 2-1 defeat against Man City. He gave a great assist. He opened up the left channel, and he took advantage of the ball when he had it, and he put some great balls in the box. And he also put a fantastic cross in for Yedlin for the goal. Excellent. He played 73 minutes. Really good. So that's, I mean, obviously a Venezuelan journalist, you're going to get a bit of bias from them, but I think he's pretty much bang on there. He did. He opened up space with his movement, his directness.
Yeah, and one thing I'd say for Rondon yesterday is I thought he was fantastic for the role. What we need from him this season probably won't be defined against Man City. It'll be defined against Bournemouth at home and that. But he's, you know, he's definitely more adept doing that job yesterday. Well, I mean, a million times Mitrovic. But Dwight Gayle didn't have the ability. And I think I'm sure Rafa wouldn't have had to send Dwight Gayle on loan to get Rondon in. It would be great to have Dwight Gayle still part of the squad. But I think Dwight Gayle's the kind of player that if he's not playing, and it takes him a long time to get sharp. We saw that at the start of last season. But ultimately, unless we sign a striker in January, unlikely, unless we're in the bottom three. And even last year, in the bottom three in January, we signed one on loan and didn't get one permanently. Ultimately, if Rondon gets injured, we're fucked, aren't we? You know, such is the difference between him and Hosslew in terms of the quality. And Hosslew has been great so far. two goals, fantastic. He's done a great job for it. But you saw the difference when kind of Hosslu came on and Rondon went off. You didn't mm-hmm. you didn't feel any more likely we're going to score despite going to four at the back and despite committing more men forwards as we did in the last 10 minutes of the game. But yeah, the listeners definitely from that poll hugely impressed with Solomon, which is good to see. This is just my inherent bias coming through, like my brain. It's not me, it's my brain. We also did a Twitter poll about we'll talk about Kennedy now, actually, Norman. Kennedy, it was announced after the game, some media said that Rafa kind of got Kennedy into his office after the Forest game when he had a pretty poor game, all in all, had a big one-to-one with him. Do you think we saw an improvement yesterday from you know, one of our most important players who's had a really tough couple of weeks? What did you make of Kennedy's performance yesterday?
Much like the rest of the team, I thought he was excellent. He was at the top of his game in the sense that, you know, you're going to be limited in what you can do against Man City. But I thought that the job that he was given, the role that he had to play in the side, was excellent. He was no better or no worse than anyone else, I would say. And you know, against an opponent like Man City, who are one of the best teams in the world, quite obviously. I think with Kennedy, I think it's going to be up and down with him throughout the season. I think I hesitate to say it, but there's a kind of a mental fragility there with him, and I think he's going to be the kind of player who he's either like on the pitch looking like he's in the depths of despair, or he's, you know, he's absolutely running things. And I think Rafa's probably realised that, hence the one-to-one with him, and he's trying to build up his mental strength. I think he's one of those players who maybe if he gets a one or two decisions go against him in the first few minutes, or he loses a ball a couple of times, or a couple of passes go astray, I think it impacts on his game quite heavily. And he's still relatively young. So there is that kind of element of having to use kid gloves with him. And I think Rafa did it this week, and we obviously saw the benefits yesterday because he put the graft in, and he's passing was better, he's running off the ball was better, and yeah, it was just a better all round performance. And I'm really looking forward to seeing him play against Arsenal.
Yeah, me too. I thought, you know, that touch for the goal was brilliant. There aren't many players that we've got probably that have that technical ability. Him and Perez, maybe the only ones to bring that ball down and play. And Rondon was fantastic. And by all accounts, he was playing with a headache and an illness, and that's why he was withdrawn so early. So better days ahead for Kennedy. He's so important to this side. I mean, you know, there seems to be a little bit of online angst with him, and he was very poor against Forest, as was everybody. No one came out of that with any credit at all. But yeah, I totally agree with you that against Arsenal, he'd be a massive player for us, and I expect him to see much more from him moving forwards. Fernandes or Clark? This is presuming, Norman, that we'll go back to a back four against Arsenal. I really hope we do, because Arsenal are not Chelsea and they're not Man City. But Fernandes or Clark, who would you start alongside Jamal Lascelles based on what you saw yesterday?
Oh, Fernandes all day. And that's not taking anything away from Clark's performance yesterday. And really, you know, in the league games we've played this season, Clark's he's been okay. But Fernandes, he's calmer. He looks less prone to the kind of lapses of concentration that Clark has. And he's more of a leader as well. He's an organiser and a leader, and you saw that yesterday. He's a talker and a shouter, and I think that's hugely important because it relieves the pressure on Lascelles being the vocal point of the other side. Fernandes' experience is, you know, it's right up there. He's played for Argentina. He's got loads of games in the Premier League, and I just think he's a better player than Clark. So for me, it's a no-brainer.
Yeah, fair enough. And on that, we'll put to the listeners: would you understand if Rafa set up the team as defensively as he had in the last two games against Arsenal in 2 weeks' time? And this was a close one. So 47% said yes, which was the most popular answer. They would back the manager playing five at the back against Arsenal. 24% said no, which is a minority, but quite high. But then a higher 29% said depends on injury. So if Shelby wasn't back and Richie wasn't back, they'd back it. Do you back the manager no matter what, Norman? Against Arsenal?
I have to. I mean, look. If, you know, whatever system Rafa puts up against Arsenal, you know, I'm going to be there giving it me 100% support.
Even though you're in Portugal.
But I like. Well, I'm going to be there like in spirit, and I'll be watching on telly as well. Again, the plan will be just, you know, start drinking early on, so Gemma ends up having a nap when kickoff happens. That's my tactic now. It's, you know, it's tried and tested. But in terms of I'll support his decisions 100%. Do I want to see us go play with an attacking, a more attacking outlook against Arsenal? Of course I do. But if we didn't, then you know what's the point in sitting there and twisting about it? I'll just, you know, it's Rafa's decision, and I'm sure that. You know, I'm sure that he'll more times than not, more often than not, he's going to be proven right, regardless of what ultimately what I think he should and shouldn't do in a match.
Yeah, I mean, we're recording this before Man City play, not Man City, Arsenal play Cardiff today, which you and Mike so eloquently talked through on the Premier League preview podcast, the betting preview that you do for patrons. I might include a little clip of that now for listeners, so check out this. And if you're interested in more, listen to or subscribe to our extra content on Patreon. The Premier League show is absolutely fantastic. Norman, John and Mike do a show on a Monday, going through all 10 Premier League games, and then they do the betting show on the betting preview on the Thursday, looking at all 10 Premier League games and the odds on each one. So get involved. We'd love to have you on board.
Yes. I guarantee it's going to be Neil Warnock bingo. Basically, there will be a few horrific challenges going in from Cardiff, and then post-match, Neil Warnock's like, you know, he's not that type of player. Right? He's a good lad. He's a good lad, is our Sean. You know, and he's just taking the lad out. Aubameyang's just being taken out at waist height and then booted in the head. You know, that sort of thing. I can see that coming a mile off, and Warnock is going to be in his absolute element in the lead up to this game, during the game, and after the game.
I'll tell you what, mate, right? You know this kind of supposedly managers, the away team's manager goes to the home manager's office and they have like a glass of wine or whatever it is after the match. What the fuck would Emery and Warnock be talking about? You know, like if this happens, what? Can you just imagine the conversation between Emery and Warnock? I mean, you just... like, what would it be? You know what I mean? What would it be? What? I can't get
what would the drink be? I reckon Warnock might have a tap of Boddington's or a Worthington's cream flow, I reckon, in the
keg in the office, like crisps. Just basically against us. Emery goes in there and Warnock's got the Ginsters laid out, still in the packet, like, you know what I mean, not even heated up. And he's got keg. Well, name a good Yorkshire ale. John Smith's. Whoa.
Well, you could, Tetley's bitter or something on that. It'd be a
Tetley's.
Yeah, could well be. He would definitely call him son as well. It'd be come on in, son. In you come. Let's have a chat about how lucky you got today. It would be along those lines.
But I think Arsenal are nowhere near the level of Chelsea and Man City. They have fantastic players. Whilst I wouldn't expect to go out there and have a go, I would understand if the manager wants to play five at the back, if he thinks that's the best way of winning, fine. But if I'm kind of probably in that, depends on injuries camp. If Shelby's fit and match fit, you need players ahead of him for him to be able to contribute, and would be much better playing with two wingers and a number 10 and a striker against Arsenal, in my opinion. But like you say, I'm not going to twist on or sit there and, you know, say the manager doesn't know what he's doing. He knows more than me. But I think Arsenal's a great opportunity to get our season up and running, but I suppose maybe a little bit more on that later, Norman. So listeners, very similar there, the answers, that one on the old poll. And I agree with everything that you say about Fernandes. He's really impressed me so far. I'm quite impressed by his heading ability, and I know that's probably a little bit boring, but his headed clearances are always quite intelligent and fine in Newcastle player. But you know, Kieran Clark's done no wrong, I suppose. But I'd probably say definitely Fernandes is maybe an upgrade. And listen, you know, Fernandes cost £6 million, which for us is like a, you know, like £60 million for a Man City. So probably will get in the team on that. All right then, let's talk about bigger picture in the season as a whole, Norman. Alan Shearer Match of the Day said last night we are on a relegation battle. True or false to you? How are you feeling about the season and fixture wise? You know, we've got 1 point from 4 games. We've lost 4 games, including the cup game against Forest. Are we in a relegation battle right now? And how are you feeling about the season now? We're 4 games in and heading into an international break.
I think us alongside probably another 10 sides in the division. Maybe even you could even stretch it to 11. You know, 11 sides if you look at the table last season. we're probably all in a relegation battle up until about, you know, February, and then a few of them will drop out of that relegation battle, and then it'll, you know, by sort of March, April time, it'll be down to six or seven sides. So right now, of course, we're in a relegation battle because we're not going to finish top six. We're not going to finish top eight, are we? So at this point in time, then the priority is to get the points, not to be relegated. So if you look at it like that, we are in a relegation battle. Do I think we'll get relegated? No, I didn't. And does the season so far give me any cause for concern? Not particularly. We've lost to three of probably, you know, Europe's most expensively assembled sides. Maybe you can take Spurs out in terms of they haven't invested for a while, but if you look at the value of the players on paper, they know that very, very, very highly valued. And they're a lot of them more expensive when they bought them. And they're an excellent side. And, you know, we've lost by narrow margins. We lost with a kind of almost last minute own goal against Chelsea. We lost to a Kyle Walker screamer yesterday. Spurs, I thought we were unlucky to lose. Lloris pulled off a couple of good saves. And we could have had 3 points against Cardiff despite a poor performance. I'm not concerned at the minute. Looking at the next six games, you know what? If the next six games, Arsenal home, Palace away, Leicester home, Man U away, Brighton home, Southampton away. I think if we get to the end of those games with 10, 11 points on the board, then I'll feel fairly confident we're going to be all right.
Well said. Yeah, I mean, the great thing is... Great, that's a huge exaggeration. The positive thing is that we've only lost by the odd goal to the teams that will probably make up the top three. And we definitely deserve something from Spurs. You know, we were two really bad refereeing decisions away against Chelsea. And, you know, Man City, despite it being close, we deserve to lose that game. I can't argue the case for a point. But ultimately, you know, looking at the teams above us, Cardiff have yet to play. If they lose to Arsenal today, you know, 2 points from their fixtures, you know, that's really poor. Huddersfield, decent point at Everton. West Ham, these teams, in my opinion, I mean, even the likes of Brighton, if you look at who they've faced, and Palace, they've had worse starts to the season than we have, in my opinion. So there's definitely scope there for other teams being bad, and I think I've seen enough from us in a defensive capacity to know once again that we're going to concede very few goals. Obviously, the issue that we don't really know yet is at the other end of the pitch, and I'm hearing that the Palace game there's a lot of pressure on that game. The Brighton and Southampton games are massive games already. I mean, Southampton won at Palace yesterday, but they were poor again. I mean, Palace missed countless chances. So Southampton look a really poor side. So I think before the next international break, when we come back next time, after this one, we will know a lot more about where we are, we're heading in terms of the season. And I think, you know, as usual, we'll have a fan base with the you know, the patience of greater than any other fan base in the country, quite clearly, in my opinion, considering how, you know, what we're put up with in terms of the owner and all that kind of stuff, and the fact that, you know, the Newcastle fans at the minute, according to the media and over the years, should be demanding the manager's head, should be kicking off, should be complaining about the standard of football. But everyone seems to be understand that we're in this together, we're in this season. Yeah, I see a lot of people say Rafa shouldn't be above criticism. Yeah, criticism, you know, whatever makes you happy. If you feel that the manager should be doing better, it's absolutely fine, as long as we stay behind the team in games, which everyone seems to be doing. The away end, by all accounts yesterday, we had John there at the match representing True Faith. He did the Match Day podcast, which is out for patrons. Steve Warwick wrote the match report on Twitter, so we had two lads there. By all accounts, fantastic support for Newcastle from the away end. Sounded great on telly. Everyone's in this together, and I think we'll start seeing kind of rewards for that in the spell of games that we've talked about. Back to the listeners and what you lads and lasses think. We'll put the poll out. Do you think that United are going to stay up this season? 65% yes, which is a pretty big majority. 11% no, which is very small. 24% simply don't know yet, which is a perfectly reasonable answer. That's why I put it there, because, you know, we'll have to see us win some games ultimately and score a few goals, and we're doing neither at the minute. But for reasons that we've talked about in terms of the fixtures, in terms of that bad luck that we've had. So, you know, I thought Newcastle were very good yesterday, and it did as much as I thought we could have. Like I said earlier, Huddersfield had his little possession, got everyone behind the ball and got beat 6-1. So it could have been far, far worse. I suppose, Norman, I was supposed to ask you how was... or you were supposed to ask John how was his day, but we're unable to talk to him for Wi-Fi reasons up in Manchester. But so I suppose we'll just finish off on, you know, your thoughts on like where United go from here. I know I'm going to put you under a lot of pressure now, and say, you know, when do you think we'll start picking up fixtures? Do you see those two Brighton and Southampton games as winnable games, or are we still going to be in that part of the season where Rafa sees it as must not lose?
I see Arsenal home as a potential of picking up 1 to 3 points. Palace away, 1 to 3 points. Man U away, Leicester at home, that's a game that I think we have to pick up 3 points in. If we haven't picked up 3 points against either Arsenal or Palace, there's going to be a lot of pressure on the Leicester match, because Leicester are okay under Puel. You know, they're well drilled, they're organised, but they can be got at. They've got, as we saw yesterday, as good as Maguire is, Wes Morgan's is a major weakness. I think actually, unfortunately for us, I think Morgan will prefer to come up against someone like Rondon than a kind of Dwight Gayle type centre forward. But I think that's a big game. I think Man U away, regardless of how bad they might be at the moment under Mourinho, you know, we could probably call that one as a write-off. Brighton home, huge. Southampton away, huge. They're all these hot big games, you know, and I'm looking at these six fixtures and I'm thinking, well, if we can get three wins out of the six and maybe a draw, i.e. 10 points from the six game, which is perfectly feasible, then I'll be really, really happy with that. 7 points out of those six games, okay, you know, we've had a couple of wins in there, great. That'll be good for confidence, but would still be a bit concerned being at the end of October on only 8 points. And if we only get 4 points out in these six games, then I'll probably start to get a little bit twitchy. And that's, you know, that's a rarity for me, because I tend not to panic with a Rafa Benitez Newcastle United side. But I think maybe getting to the end of October with only 5 or 6 points on the board, then I think the worry will be quite real. So, but you know what, mate, that's not going to happen. We'll get 10 points out these next six games. The John thing, I'll just mention the Wi-Fi thing is a pretty funny story. He's up in Manchester for work and he's staying in an Airbnb, and basically the people he's renting from, he said they're quite, you know, they're on the rather senior side, two women, quite old. I'm thinking he's saying, and then their 70s or 80s, and he's asking them for a Wi-Fi password and they've just got no idea what he's talking about at all. They've got no idea what Wi-Fi is, so there you go.
What a lovely way to live,
eh? I know, mate, absolutely. It sounds ideal, doesn't it?
They aren't logging onto social media seeing someone say Rafa's a load of shite and we should be attacking Man City and logging straight off. Don't have those issues. Okay, well, I suppose this has been the True Faith Podcast. Bit of a shorter show this week because there isn't a tremendous amount to talk about. Thank you all so much for tuning in. And like I said, give us your support on Patreon if you like the show. It's massively appreciated. And we'll be back. We'll be back, I don't know, because Mick, you might have been listening to Mick's fantastic podcast with the lads from Rangers, the Sons of Struth, and Ian Burns MP. We've got all sorts of that kind of stuff coming up in the next couple of weeks. We're going to try and do as much stuff on football governance and Mike Ashley as we can with people who know what they're talking about. Otherwise, we'll be back with you, hopefully after a much-needed win against a very average Arsenal side. Cheers.